You're listening to A Climate Change, Just in That Matter, and your host, and I've got Daniel Gutierrez, CEO of Saving the Amazon, on the show. Looking forward to talking to Daniel about the work that they're doing down in the Amazon, replanting forests there. As many people say, the Amazon are the lungs of the planet, and so important to the planet. Obviously, there's a lot of deforestation going on down in the Amazon, and Daniel and his organization are doing a lot to plant trees down there to bring the Amazon back to where it needs to be to keep the planet in balance environmentally. So, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hello, Matt. Thank you very much for the invite. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, Daniel, tell us a little bit about Saving the Amazon and what how that came into being and what type of work that your organization does.
Okay, yes. We were born in 2015 out of basically, it became first like even like a business idea. Even we are an NGO, but we started like a business idea as a model, you know. We wanted for people to be able to adopt trees and to have some kind of technological supervisions to the trees that they are adopting, as in having a accountability of the process. So we wanted then at the moment, and we're still doing it, for people to adopt trees that are marked with their name on it and then send semestral pictures of each tree's growth with your name on it still, so that you could also like have a meaningful connection with them. And that was the first idea. That was an idea that I had with my mom, and we both basically talked it through. And then it became something completely different when we started to talk it through a little bit more, and we decided to go to the Amazon, because the Amazon was probably the place which needed most tree planting, since it's also the place with most deforestation, which was in our hand. I'm a Colombian person. And then we went there and we decided that we needed to work with indigenous communities. That was also a very important part of what then became the NGO, and even like my life journey, how it transformed me to get to know much more about their ecocentric life views. And we then decided that this model of work was going to be done by the indigenous communities, and much more than tree planting, it was going to be a work made so that the sovereignty of these communities and their ecocentric life views could be protected and empowered. So that's in a nutshell like the story of how did it start. It was already 9 years ago, and now we're not only in Colombia, but in other two countries planting trees, in Brazil and Peru, more than 30 communities, and the project has already gained some scale, but still with the same fundamentals.
Well, that's a great story. I love how it started off with just you and your mom coming up with this idea, which I think is a brilliant one in terms of accountability and getting people to connect to the trees that they're planting, so they can see, hey, the impact that they're having on a community. Tell us a little bit, I mean, just geography-wise, a lot of us think of the Amazon and we think of Brazil, but in truth, I guess the headwaters of the Amazon, are they in Colombia or Peru as well?
Yes. So 62% of the whole Amazon is Brazil. And the rest of the Amazon is composed by 7 countries, in which Colombia has 8% of the Amazon, of the complete Amazon rainforest, which is actually our 8% is 40% of all of Colombia's territory. Like when you think of Colombia, you don't think of the Amazon at all, but it's actually 40% of our territory. That's crazy. But more to answer a little bit your question, our headquarters of the Amazon is located in a city, a little village city, you may say, of around 50,000 people called Mitú. Mitú, which is in the department of Vaupés, one that borders Brazil. So that's where our activity started happening. That's the first community we worked with. And now basically that's mostly where we base our operations.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey into this. What was the stuff that led up to you, you know, kind of coming to this idea with your mom? What was your background and training and all that?
Yeah, so I guess this may sound like a phrase that everybody says, but I've always been extremely interested in the environment. I guess not only in the sense of wanting to take care of the world, acknowledging the crisis that we're in, but like even like as a spiritual presence to be like, I don't know, in the presence of trees and how I could like feel good when I'm with them and feel more relaxed. That was always important for me. And I think my mom understood that since I was a very little kid. I would like to read about this kind of stuff. I didn't study it in my undergrad. I did a psychology undergrad. But I guess that was always like an important side of me. And my mom has a company, and all of her life journey, her labor life journey, she's done it with maps, with GIS technology. Related to GIS technology, she has a company that is kind of big in Colombia that works in that. So I guess maybe it was a little bit, let's see the interests of Daniel and see how I can work them through in with my mom's like abilities and technology expertise. And then, okay, let's do something related to our expertise and Daniel's interests. So I guess that was maybe one of the reasons why it started being that. But as I told you, like a little bit before, then it became something much different. You know, I have a very nice story that I think it would be nice to say right now, which is when I first came to Vaupés, the place that I told you where we started working with a specific indigenous community called Tayasú, I went there thinking that the project was very much going to be about trees, you know, about trees and geolocating the trees and the people who would adopt them. But when I came there and I told the communities, hey, I want to work this project of trees with you, from the beginning, they said, hey, now we could be keen, we could be interested, but this has to be done our way. We have to be the ones who decide what to plant, where to plant, how decisions are being made about who is the person who plants, because we're working in collective territories. So that was very, like, that opened my mind a lot about how it is so important that the environmental problems that we're having right now, they're much more about giving the voice to the people who have actually intentions of safeguarding the earth. So that's just something that I wanted to say.
Well, that's it's very important, and I appreciate you sharing it, because it's it is something that I've heard from a lot of environmentalist leaders that I've spoken to, is the importance of listening to indigenous populations, and that they've got such great lessons for us of how to steward our environment, and that we've kind of lost our way as kind of Westerners in terms of stewardship. Our model of stewardship is kind of broken, because essentially we've got a corporate model of business, and business is about exploiting resources versus looking seven generations in the future and saying, hey, how is this going to affect this community a couple hundred years from now versus this quarter's profit margin? Okay, yeah, it makes sense to level this forest if all we're thinking about is what money we're going to make in the next 90 days versus what's this community going to be like for my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren.
Yeah, I guess that the hyperbolic discounting, they say, they call it like that, in how we humans understand that maybe it's just the short term that we think about, and those definitely are the kind of conversations that we must have, not only regarding like our values and like our, how the West has created this economy of short-term, shareholder value. But I guess this also comes from the economic precepts that we have, right? What are we thought in economics as what is the journey that we should aspire to when we do a business, when we are a country? Is GDP growth the goal? Should that be the goal or not? I think those are the questions that we must make ourselves. And in that sense, I think as you said, the knowledge of these communities has much, much more to offer.
Well, I definitely think that as somebody who studied economics in undergraduate, which I did before I went to law school, I think our system based upon GDP and tethering all economies and all societies to that statistic is what drives us to the edge of disaster, because we're looking at the wrong statistic. We're measuring our success based upon just making more stuff versus preserving the great stuff that we have that is invaluable, that can't be replaced. You know, you don't get any benefit. Nobody says, oh, you did a great job saving a species or saving a forest or something like that. So obviously there's value in that, but our societies haven't valued those things, and probably looking to indigenous communities to say, hey, they value those things a lot more than we do. So anyway, we're going to our break right now. You're listening to A Climate Change. I've got Daniel Gutierrez from Saving the Amazon on the program, and we'll be right back in just a minute with Daniel. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern, and I've got Daniel Gutierrez from Saving the Amazon on the show. And Daniel, kind of getting back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the Amazon being the lungs of the planet, how badly has deforestation affected the Amazon jungle and the rainforest there?
Okay, so I'm going to give you right now the main statistic that you may have to know about how affected the Amazon is and what could that mean for us as the whole society, and that's why they call the Amazon the lungs of the world. So Amazon has been deforested in 17% of the whole Amazon has been deforested. This has been happening mostly in Brazil. And but right now we're also having like a lot of deforestation like around Colombia, Peru, and basically in these spaces of frontier where like the development of like the productive system is going mostly to these frontiers. Now, how important is this? So the IPCC, which is like the main authority regarding climate change, obviously you know about this, Matt. I'm guessing the people who are listening to the to this podcast must know this as well. But they talk about these turning points, these inflection points about like certain phenomenons, dimensions of what's going on with the Earth system that could flip if like the degradation of them still is happening. So one of those is the Amazon, which is a tropical rainforest. That's the name of the ecosystem of the Amazon, right? A tropical rainforest. And if deforestation continues that way, like the prediction, the latest predictions that scientists talk about is if it goes, still not known exactly the percentage, but between 30 to 40% of deforestation, it will start a process like an inflection point in which the whole Amazon will turn into a savanna. So not longer a tropical rainforest, but a savanna for the whole Amazon, because it will change its structure as a complete system. So like that is a very, very scary. Also, because like the Amazon is not only speaking about carbon, which a lot of times when we're thinking about environmentalism and we're always speaking about Carmen, but like all of the rains of Latin America and even a piece of the US, like the southern part of the US, is regulated throughout the Amazon. So basically, I mean, all of the services that this rain gives us about the predictability, the agriculture, etc., could be lost if this process continues. So that's kind of where we are right now.
So in terms of turning it around, what percentage or what is the amount of rainforest that's currently being cut down every year, and what percentage of the rainforest is kind of being reforested by you and your organization and organizations like yours? Is it kind of keeping even, or are we losing ground in terms of more land is being deforested every year by, you know, big companies and agricultural and stuff like that?
No, absolutely and completely losing the battle. So deforestation in the whole Amazon, because as I told you, it depends between countries. Let's say, for example, Guyana is right now, he was very in the news these days regarding climate change because he did a confrontation to a BBC news guy. It's an interesting topic. But Guyana has like almost non-deforestation. But when you go to Brazil or Colombia, there's a lot of it. So talking about the number that you asked me, we're like right now a year in around 1 million to 1.5 million hectares of deforestation in the whole Amazon. What do we have in Colombia, which is like the one that I have the specific number about, because these statistics, they vary a lot depending on the way that they are measured. So in Colombia, last year we had deforestation of 140,000 hectares. So how is the tree planting and the deforestation, are we evening it up, as you asked? Before answering that question with the number, it's important to understand that when a tree is cut off, like what they call a primary forest, like some trees that have been around for more than 30 years and like their complexities of their interactions between trees have already evolved in so many different ways to enhance biodiversity, it's so different the ecosystem services that they give when they've been long-standing, like primary forest, than when we are planting them like from the beginning, right? So like it's not only like about how many hectares are we planting compared to how many hectares have been lost, but actually, you know, like if we lose like 1 hectare, I mean, we should plant at least 5, because like it doesn't add up the services that they give when it's planted and conserved. That's why a lot of people say, and when you see like in the World Resources Institute and these big multilateral institutions which are working in these kind of topics, they're always saying the main thing we should do should be avoiding deforestation. So now a little bit more answering to your question. Colombia, 170,000 hectares being lost, 134 hectares being lost, sorry, 5,000, between 5,000 to 6,000 hectares being restored actively by planting trees. So like we are very much far away, not even at 10% of what we should be doing regarding planting trees, if that would be evening it up.
Okay. So that gives the audience a good sense, or gives me a good sense of how far behind we are. I guess the question is, how do we stop the deforestation? What would be the best ways to slow it down and then ultimately stop it?
Yeah. So that, once again, I think it speaks about different drivers of deforestation depending on where are we located. So in Brazil, let's say a lot of deforestation comes from the big industries, right? From the soy palm industries, from the palm industries and from the cattle ranching industries. So there you have like very big capitals which are investing a lot of money and then that, like, there is not much sovereignty of the governments around what's happening in those lands. But let's say in Colombia, for example, the drivers or the deforestation are a little bit different. It's much more because, like, we have some conflict, a way long conflict of like more than 50, 60 years, in which nobody actually knows who the land belongs to in Colombia, because of all of what has been going on with the drugs war and drug wars and the armed conflict. So people just cut some trees, put a couple of cows, not because they are very interested in the cattle ranching business, but more because they cutting some trees and putting some cows is a way of saying this land is mine. So regarding that, like, it depends between each country, which kind of drivers do they have. I very much like this framework that is used to understand deforestation, which is you have some direct drivers and then you have indirect drivers, right? So which are the direct drivers? The actual people who are literally making the action of deforestation. So let's say you have to put a road. When you create a road, like, you have to cut some trees to create that road, right? That would be a direct driver of deforestation. But then that road becomes also an indirect driver of deforestation, because it makes it easier to people who may be interested to make deforestation to be around that place, right? So in that sense, we are talking about indirect and direct drivers, the indirect being most like what makes it easier for this act of deforestation to happen from the direct drivers. I very much like that framework. It's the most widely used to understand deforestation. So in that sense, when you look at what's going on, not even between countries, you know, even like inside a country in different places, like, the causes may be very different. But one that is definitely a way forward to look at solutions, I think, it's in all of the Amazon countries, we have this same pattern, which is when you give the land to indigenous people, so for them to safeguard it and for them to say that it's their own land, deforestation rates go extremely low. It is mostly when you give the land to private actors who may be interested in, like, yeah, like, understanding the land as a place to extract for extractive industries, when there is most possibility of deforestation. So there you can start to see some patterns. Yeah.
So are there any efforts in Brazil and Colombia and Peru, or what are the efforts that are being taken to give more land to indigenous people, and how successful have they been over the last number of years?
There has been a lot of efforts. Actually, right now there's a campaign that comes from the UN, like, which attends that 30% of the whole land of the world, it has some kind of conservation figure, right? Maybe some of you guys have heard about that. And regarding that, like, a lot of countries of the Amazon are trying to align into that goal. And a way of doing that is literally giving territories to the indigenous communities. So I'm going to continue afterwards, because right now we have
a break. Sure. We'll go to a break right now, and stay tuned. We'll be right back with Daniel Gutierrez. This is Matt Mattern, and you're listening to A Climate Change. Stay tuned. You're listening to A Climate Change. This is Matt Mattern, and I've got Daniel Gutierrez, who's the CEO of Saving the Amazon, on the program. Daniel, before the break, we were talking about saving 30% of the land, and I know we're focusing. I think the Biden administration is trying to do that here in the U.S., and I think some groups are trying to save up to 50% of the land by 2050. So how is that playing out in and around the Amazon? And in particular, we were talking about giving more land to indigenous groups? And is that happening in Brazil and as well as Colombia and Peru and the surrounding area?
Yes, the answer is an absolute yes. It is happening in Brazil. It is happening in Colombia. I know that it's been also happening in Peru. The main number to give to you guys about it is like in 77 years ago, there was a park which was like it was like a 2 million hectare park that we have in Colombia, which before it was a 600,000 hectare park, and then they made it a 2 million park. But from the beginning, it was clear, and in the negotiation of how would that happen, that it would belong to the safeguarding of the indigenous communities for them to live there and to be the people who would like impose the social order on it. So that is actually happening, sometimes with difficulties for sure, because like giving certain communities some land, specifically when you're talking about indigenous communities, collective territories, there's a thing where you give it to them, but they, for example, are not able to sell it once again. You just give it to them and it's like for free, but then they can't do anything about it. And in certain territories, let's say, for example, in Ecuador, they don't have access for, let's say, to the carbon of those trees. So they wouldn't be able to sell it. So like there's still a lot of negotiations and some tensions about how this happens, but it's definitely happening, and it's very positive that it's happening, because when you see the rates of deforestation, it's one of the best measures that you can do.
So I guess the question is how that can be accelerated, and maybe other things too, in terms of I've listened to, read a lot about animal agriculture, and that seems to be one of the main drivers of deforestation, as well as just agriculture in general, and whether or not we can change our agriculture practices and maybe our eating practices to eat less meat would probably require less land to be deforested. Is that having any effect? Are we seeing anything? Or are people just eating more and more meat as our society gets richer, and such as places like India and China become more middle class? They're consuming lots more meat than they ever used to. Is that going to just keep driving deforestation at massive levels because they're going to want to eat more meat?
Yeah, I very much like your question, because I think you framed it in a way that I also like to frame it. And I like to do the analogy with what goes on with the drug wars in Colombia, and in general with all the problem of the drug trafficking industries. I don't want to say industries, but the drug trafficking business. So we here in Latin America, and what has been going on in Colombia, what has gone on in Colombia is just like, there's so much demand for the cocaine, and like then there's some people who will just try to pursue those business because they're extremely profiting. And then like, even if we have governments and most people don't like that business, and they have seen how much violence and how much terrible things have happened to Colombia because of it, like if there is a demand, like someone will supply it. And like the criminals will look the way to actually supply it. So in that sense, I think it goes same pattern with literally how much land do we need to make to eat, right? And if we're eating meat, the cow meat is for sure the animal that needs most land to be able to feed itself, so that then we can be fed by it. Then it will definitely create more deforestation pressure, without a doubt. I mean, in what you were saying about how a lot of countries are like in their journey to development, and like now they're starting, their diets are becoming much more meat-based, That is actually even also happening in Colombia, you know. You don't even have to go to India or China, where it's definitely happened. And that for sure creates more pressure over these territories. So in that sense, when you see the economical side of what is pressuring up the supply, I think the statistics are clearly showing that we're not going in a positive direction. But I also think that there's like some policies that have been going on that could like also work on that. Like, so let's say, for example, right now, all over Latin America, it's being discussed how the policies that the EU is enforcing about being completely sure that the crops that enter the EU are deforestation free, and they do it throughout satellite imagery, where they have to actually know specifically the meat that you are eating, where did it come from, and what was going on with that specific forest 2 months ago. I mean, I think those are like pretty positive policies that are going on right now, and that me as a person who is like involved in this line of work, like I've seen that everybody's talking about it here and trying to prepare for it. So good things are happening as well.
That's good. Yeah, I think that companies are being forced to look down the supply chains and saying, hey, is my supply chain really free of things that are causing environmental degradation? And a lot of groups are looking a lot more carefully, and that's good, because transparency means that these companies are going to have to clean up their act. I know you had gone to Oxford and done a master's thesis on these issues. Tell us a little bit about your thesis and how that comes into play in the work that you're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, something that when I started with Saving the Amazon and like that attracted very much my attention is like this idea of the Amazon being the lungs of the world, as you said in the beginning, right? So like this idea of the whole world needs the Amazon, and in that sense, how the whole world needs the Amazon, what discussions have been talked about the possibility of understanding the Amazon as a place for the whole world, right? So like as in the whole world should safeguard it. So I've always been interested in that, kind of like planetary consciousness kind of like vibe. Yeah. So I studied like the multilateral like agreements that have been created around the Amazon. What I did was studying two of them. One of them is like based on this program called RED Plus, REDD+, which is reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation. This was a program that was basically created in the UN circles so that countries could be paid for avoiding deforestation. Because before, like, nobody would pay these countries. And in that sense, if the global south countries are not cutting the trees as the global north has done, let's say Europe, like, I mean, they should receive some kind of compensation for the whole world. So in that kind of sense, this scheme was created, and specifically in Colombia, it was implemented with donations from the UK, Germany, and Norway. So what I did was studying what actually went on with those projects in Colombia. Were they successful? Were they not that successful? Like, how they were actually implemented, because a lot of the KPIs that a lot of times these multilateral institutions have are how many money have we given, right? But like, hey, maybe like it's not only about how many money you gave, right? It's about the actual decisions to enforce governance in those territories. And the second one, which is going to be after the short that we're going to have, telling to you a little bit more about my conclusions, was there's an institution called the ACTO, which is called the Amazon Cooperation Treaty Organization, in which all of the countries that make part of the Amazon make part of this organization. And it is throughout the ministries of foreign affairs that everybody speaks in there, so that they could make decisions together of how to safeguard the Amazon, all of the countries that make part of it. So I also analyzed what was going on with that institution specifically, historically. How is it something positive? How is it something that like doesn't work? So looking into those two dimensions of multilateralism in the Amazon was my dissertation. And yeah, then maybe that'll be for next part. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll jump back into that right after the break. Everybody who listened to A Climate Change, and we've got Daniel Gutierrez of Saving the Amazon on the program, and getting a Oxford-like seminar here on the program today. So stay tuned if you want to get your diploma. You're listening to A Climate Change, and I've got Daniel Gutierrez, CEO of Saving the Amazon. And Daniel, you were telling us about, you know, the work you did at Oxford on the Red Plus and the ACTO organizations and your study of these, and whether you found these programs that were being used were effective. And maybe you could tell us how effective you think they are, and how they maybe could be improved upon.
Okay, let's start with the ACTO. The ACTO, as I said, is like basically the institution that is the official channel for governments that encompass the Amazon to make decisions together about how to handle it. But as we all know as well, everybody thinks the Amazon is Brazil, and because like they have more than 50% of the Amazon, right? So in those conversations, the multilateral conversations of that place, Brazil also thinks the Amazon is Brazil. So basically Brazil like has a lot of power in it. And since decisions have to be made by consensus, what do I mean by consensus? Like everybody has to agree if they're going to sign anything. So it's extremely hard because Brazil always wants to have its own way. Also, like because like their diplomacy, their diplomat power is much bigger. They have a lot of more employees that are working on that, and like they're like also because they're a much bigger country. So something that I first, that was an important insight. So like when you think about the Amazon and trying to work things through between countries, there's a lot of political discussions behind it. So as the whole world is happening right now, Latin America is also an ideological battlefield where we have a lot of leftist governments and we have some very right-wing governments. So this difference in ideological perspectives is also very latent in this multilateral, like, Minister of Foreign Affairs institutions. So when a leftist government comes, then he becomes angry with the other right-wing government, and then they don't make decisions because there's certain word that they don't agree on. There's even, it's extremely interesting because you even have a lot of discussions about just some words that reflect different life views that governments may have. So let's say Ecuador and Bolivia, which are countries that also make part of the Amazon, they like a lot to speak about Mother Earth, this like indigenous wisdom kind of a language. And let's say Brazil and Colombia, which are not so much based on indigenous wisdom in their governments, they don't like it at all when they speak about Mother Earth, because they're just like, hey, no, you have to be as scientific as possible. So even this like specific, that you may say stupid things about how do we define our relationship with the earth, then they are the ones that don't allow for things to evolve. Surprisingly, you know, like these specific issues about words. So my analysis in general was that this organization, ACTO, was not very effective was not, there wasn't a lot of things going on with it. Like the, it had little budget, and its budget was just to make little research that could encompass something that that are like the shared problems that the Amazon countries have. But yeah, not very effective as you we may think in this idea of the Panamazonic territory that we could create. So yeah, that was like my first analysis in the ACTO one. And I don't know, Matt, if you have any questions.
I have a follow-up question on that, because Venezuela is kind of a wild card in that area. And I'm curious if they're a part of that organization and what they've been doing or not doing related to the Amazon.
They are part of that organization, but when I was there doing my dissertation research, that was like 1 year and 8 months ago, actually, they hadn't paid the subscription that they had to pay, and it's government who pays it like for 2 or 3 years. So like I spoke with like the president of the ACTO at the moment and for my research, and he was just like, we don't know what to do with these guys. So yeah, it is definitely a wild card and something that it's very difficult to handle for sure, because I don't know, let's say right now we have a leftist president in Colombia, but before our president was maybe the main the president who was most against the Maduro regime, right? So how can you speak together, speak about conservation when you hate each other so much in the government level? So that's definitely an issue, Matt.
Right. So let's shift over to the other group, which you were saying like Germany and Norway and the UK had been funding some programs to stop deforestation. And how effective has that been, or any of the other programs that you studied?
Yeah, so the amount of money in this Red Plus program that these three countries have been giving to Colombia has been, last time I checked, with which was last year, $237 million. So that's a lot of money to avoid deforestation. Basically the idea was, let's see where the deforestation hotspots are and put money there so that we can shift up the kind of productive activities that the people do over there so that there is no need for deforestation, and they can create like what is called right now a bioeconomy, right? An economy where people can resolve their needs by keeping the trees standing. So the carbon market could be very much involved there, but also like all what is the bioeconomy, like doing fruit trees or other kind of services that the standing forest may give you. So basically that money then goes to four different type of activities, one being more like giving productive possibilities to the people who have been cutting the trees, mostly which are not in the indigenous territories, but in other places, you know, the places where we call them campesinos, like the villagers, which are not indigenous. They're the ones who are mostly cutting up the trees, so giving them opportunities. There was also a pillar now, and I remember what it was called, a pillar for indigenous people. 20% of the money was giving there. 60% of the money was given to the villagers, because that's where, like the theory goes, where the deforestation is actually happening is where we have to put our efforts, right? Not the place where we know that these guys are kind of already taking care of the forest. Then they also gave some money so that they could, so that the Ministry of Environment could create public policy, like literally to create public policy. And the other one was to, so that the Ministry of Environment could interact truly with other ministries, because when you're thinking about deforestation, you have to think with, you have to speak also with the Ministry of Energy, with the Ministry of Transport, with even with the Ministry of Tourism. So like giving, making sure that all of these interactions can happen so that we can avoid deforestation. What has been what this program, this Red Plus program did. So what are my conclusions? When you see the actual figures of number of hectares that have been deforested, like figures haven't gone down. It went down last year, but from when I was studying, it was still rising. So in that sense, the results haven't been very good. But I should also say that, you know, like the guy who was leading this process that I interviewed, he would always tell me, you know, fighting against deforestation is not a 100-meter race. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. What does it mean? That there's a lot of enabling necessities of how this could actually be done regarding shifting the values of the people who are doing the deforestation, and all which is related with the indirect drivers that we were speaking about earlier that are actually being worked on. So regarding what I saw, I do have a faith in the sense that this money has been well spent, and we're gonna see like a much lower rate of deforestation, as may could be the case. It's already happening because of last year's figures, which went down that much. So yeah, that could be maybe like my idea.
Well, it's good news that we're seeing some degree of progress. Though we look at $237 million, and that's a lot of money, but when we consider the trillions of dollars that are being spent on other things, you know, that we certainly could fund and should fund billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars to save the rainforest. I mean, because we consider that all life on the planet depends on it. Certainly that's worth that kind of money to save it. And we're just not investing the kinds of money that we need to be putting into it. Let me just kind of pivot back to your organization and what you guys are doing. And I know we've got only about a minute to wrap it up, but tell us how many trees you planted and where people can find you on the internet to give and get their tree planted.
So right now we have planted more than 674,000 trees, in mostly in Colombia, but also in Brazil and Peru. As I told you, we're working with more than 700 families. And the way to look for us, it's quite easy, savingtheamazon.org. And you can also find us on Instagram, Saving the Amazon.
And we're also through a climate change. If you guys follow us on a climate change, we're planting trees in the Amazon through Daniel's organization. And you can follow Daniel and your trees on his website at savingtheamazon.com. So thank you so much, Daniel, for being on the program. Appreciate the great work that you're doing, and look forward to seeing our trees growing there in the Amazon. We can change the world if we can.